Here's a little bit more on the plan they were debating. President Bush is sending more troops and money to Iraq. He is also asking more from Iraqi troops and from Iraq's government. One big question is whether the Iraqis will deliver what the United States wants. And we have a report from NPR national security correspondent Jackie Northam.
U.S. officials complain that Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's nine-month tenure in office is scarred with broken promises and unfulfilled expectations about his government's efforts to bring security to Iraq. President Bush, in his speech on Wednesday, made it clear that now Maliki must assume more responsibility for his country's future, in particular, security. Bush's plan calls for an increase in U.S. troops, military trainers and advisors, and a significant increase in the number of Iraqi soldiers and policemen in Baghdad. In the past, there was frustration among U.S. officials about Iraqi political interference during military operations. Yesterday, Defense Secretary Bob Gates indicated that's all changed.
I think one of the most important commitments that the Prime Minister has made is that in this offensive, the military will have the authority to go after all lawbreakers. There are no exceptions.
Gates was asked, but declined to say specifically, if that included Muqtada al-Sadr, the head of a powerful Shiite militia and a key supporter of Prime Minister Maliki. Those types of overlapping allegiances have exasperated U.S. officials who have been pushing Maliki to rein in the militias. Nora Ben-Sahel, a senior political scientist at RAND Corporation, says it's unlikely that will happen.
Maliki himself gets a lot of support from the Shiite groups and from some of the Shiite militias, and I think that it will be very difficult for him to truly live up to the pledge which he made, which was to crack down on all of the militias, regardless of their particular identity and their particular background.
President Bush's plan also urges the Iraqi parliament to pass legislation ensuring the fair distribution of oil revenues. And it says that $10 billion of Iraqi funds should be channeled into jobs and reconstruction projects. So far, Maliki's Shiite-dominated government has pumped few dollars into Sunni regions. That's raised questions about whether the prime minister truly wants a unity government. Paul Hughes with the U.S. Institute of Peace says achieving political unity may not be possible.
It's very difficult for the government to try and reach out to opponents outside the government to bring them in and reconcile when the government itself is not reconciled among its own members.
President Bush's plan has the feel of a last-ditch effort. But what if the Iraqis fail to deliver on their end of the bargain? The RAND Corporation's Ben Sahel says U.S. leverage is limited, a notion not lost on the Iraqis.
If it's just the threat of the complete withdrawal of U.S. forces, I'm not sure that that creates the right incentives for the government to go along with the U.S. strategy. I think that you will see a lot of political jockeying to try to come up with the best position in the inevitable chaos after the U.S. withdraws. I don't think that that necessarily creates pressure on them to do what the President of the United States wants.
Rick Barton, a senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says the U.S. can't be determinative at this point, in part because the Iraqis are dealing with what's happening in their own way.
Tens of thousands of more people might get killed. If we can help prevent that, that would be of value. But again, let's be realistic in terms of what our influence is in this case and what our likely commitment is.
The president's plan doesn't put any deadlines for Maliki to carry out any of the political goals, but administration officials indicate their patience is limited. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Washington.